Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
One of my favorite guests to have on this show, Aaron Fentress of the Oregonian, Oregon Live. That's right, he's back. He's covering the Blazers. He always brings the energy, full of opinions, never boring. Fentress joining us now. What is it like to cover a team that's playing games and you're essentially covering from your couch? Everybody is. That's weird.
Dude, I'm taking my big leather chair, parking in front of the TV. That's my press row. You know, I got my kid bringing me drinks, and, you know, my wife bring me stats.
That's great.
So, yeah, it's hilarious.
Do you dress for the games? Do you put on, like, a nice shirt and some pants, or are you sitting there with your shorts on and a T-shirt?
How do you know? I get dressed up. I have my kids check my credentials before I enter the living room. And I just go through the whole thing. I even, like, for one game, for one of the scrimmages, I took an old parking pass and I parked, and I had to flash my kids the pass. They let me park.
I love it.
The driveway. Yeah, just try to recreate what it would be like to actually be at a game.
All right, so the game gets played. You watch it. You obviously make some observations. You're tweeting about it. What happens in the post game? Do the Blazers do a Zoom call, or what is happening?
Yeah, man, and they're quick too. Like, it's like within 5 minutes, Stotts is ready to roll. So you just punch in to the Zoom, and you're there. And there they are. You push a little raise your hand button, and they come to you when it's your turn. You ask a question. You can ask a follow-up if you want to. Moves pretty quickly. They've done a good job making all these things available. And then if you want to go back and watch past ones or those for other teams, you can go into a database, basically, NBA, it's called NBA content or something like that, and you can watch other Zoom interviews. So like last night, after the game, after watching the Blazers live, I then went and watched Brad Stevens, because it was right there, boom, on the Celtics page, pow. So, yeah, they're doing a good job making sure we can get some type of access.
Aaron, the Blazers, it's tough for them because, obviously, the teams that are in the bubble are all decent or better. I thought they looked all right against Memphis, competed, won that game. Boston looked like maybe just a little too much for them, but they're in these games. They're one of the more interesting teams, and I love sort of that chip on the shoulder, us against the world mentality.
Yeah, they're there to make the playoffs. They're there to prove that, you know, they would have been a lot better during the regular season had they had their pieces. You know, obviously Collins was out and Nurk was out. And they're clearly a much better team with those two. You know, Collins has been up and down, obviously has 9 fouls in 2 games, something like that. But he still brings you that energy, which obviously helps, especially at that 4 spot. We need someone to maybe alter some shots, block some shots, get some rebounds, help out Nurk. Nurk is just money. I mean, goodness gracious, to be out that long. And then, of course, dealing with his grandma, he said has COVID and was in a coma. I think he said yesterday that she woke up and was doing better. But to have that hanging over you, to play like he is playing, is just unbelievable. My thing with yesterday's game in that first half is my whole thing with the Blazers had always been that when they play teams that have really good wings, the 6'6", 6'7", 6'8", they struggle with that. But when you had Aminu and Harkless, who could play some defense at least, that helps you without those guys, and without Ariza, and Carmelo's not a great defender, that was a bad matchup. And those three were just running amok in the first half. And the fact that they came back the way they did was absolutely phenomenal. Like, I was so impressed. Sometimes a team comes back and falls short, but you're just as impressed as you if they would have finished it off, because that Boston team was on fire. 60% from three, are you kidding me? And they almost won that game. Very impressive.
It's really interesting to me to watch Yusuf Nurkic. Is he better than you thought he'd be at this point?
This point in his comeback, or this point in his
this comeback, because this comeback, because I had sort of written him off, I think a lot of us did before coronavirus, is like, we're just going to see him next October, and hopefully he'll be right. He looks really good.
Yeah, so one of the things that I think I talked to maybe a friend about this a couple weeks ago, is I was like, you remember like in The Last Dance, the Jordan thing, he came back after a year and a half and was not the same guy. And that was Michael Jordan, right? He just wasn't the same player for the rest of the season, the rest of the regular season and into the playoffs. He was not the same guy. So I'm thinking Nurk is out 16 months. He's got to have some rust, right? Nope. He's been phenomenal. He's been efficient. He's doing a little bit of everything. He tries to stay away from the threes until he really masters hitting those. But he's just been phenomenal for them. And without him, I think they definitely lost the first game. And they might have not been able to complete the comeback yesterday. Well, they didn't complete it, but they might not have. They could have been down 30 without him because he was basically carrying him in the first half. So it's been phenomenal to watch what he's done, being out 16 months since the last time he played a real basketball game.
Aaron Fentress with us, the Oregonian, Oregon Live. All right, if they make the Final Eight, what are we calling that? The real playoffs.
They
get into the playoffs. And is that mission accomplished for this season, for the Blazers season? Or do you get the sense that getting there, they would then redirect and go, all right, let's have some fun once we're in there?
I think they definitely would redirect and try and have some fun. They've never been the type of team to roll over. I know in the past, and how many times has Golden State eliminated them in the last few years? Has it been three? Two, at least twice, if not three times. One year they beat Houston, they played the Spurs next. That was uphill battle. They lost 4-1. So, but they entered all those series like, why can't we win? Screw all you guys. I remember Dame getting into it with some people on Twitter about it. What, are we supposed to just quit? We're going to go out there and play. So that's always been their mentality with Lillard. I don't believe they have a chance in hell of beating the Lakers. Like, no way. I don't think anyone's going to touch LeBron and Anthony Davis personally. But they're going to be in it to try and win it. Like, they're not going to roll over. I do think if you're a fan, or even if you're the organization, with all they've been through this year, all the bad luck they've had, I think just fighting back and getting into the playoffs would be definitely, not a huge accomplishment, but make this a far more palatable season than it was back in March.
Aaron Fentress with us of the Oregonian, Oregon Live. Aaron, the missing piece, Trevor Ariza, I keep thinking how good they would be if they had a perimeter defender who could really defend like that. Have you had enough time to look at them, or do you need more sample size to kind of go, okay, what are they really missing? I know you've been on the beat a short time, but have you had enough time to go, okay, man, you know what they're really missing is? Can you fill in the blank on that?
Yeah, they need a legitimate three that is not only a threat to shoot it, can play defense, and can go to the basket and be an athlete. I mean, they need Jaylen Brown, or they need a Jason Tatum. They need a guy like that. And if they ever want to contend, I've always felt like that was the missing thing. Someone with length, someone who can do certain things that you're just not going to get from 6'2", 6'3", guys, or from 35-year-old Carmelo. And then when Aminu and Harkless, like I mentioned, those guys, body type, they gave you a lot of length and athleticism, but neither one of them were really consistent as shooters or scorers necessarily. They weren't starting caliber, I would say, on a championship team. But they need that guy. If they're going to contend, let's put it this way. If they had Carmelo 8 years ago, you're good, but you got Carmelo at 35, 36. But it's going to be hard to get that guy. You just can't magically snap your fingers and get him. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do moving forward. Do you trade McCollum? To me, if you could get the equivalent of McCollum at 6'6", 6'7", play him at the three, and then start Trent, who obviously is looking really good, I think you're a better team. Because you add that length and you become better defensively. So we'll see what they do in the offseason.
Aaron, the Blazers have long been a source of pride in Portland. What do you think the most likable asset or most likable facet of this team is?
They're fun. Like, they're fun to watch. This whole six-year run, when they've been pretty good to good, at the very least, whenever they've, whenever it's just been obvious, okay, they're not going to beat the Warriors, right? They're not going to win the title, et cetera, et cetera. They're at least a very entertaining team. And I think, you credit Stotts for that. you credit Olshay for putting pieces out there that can work around Dame as best he can with the limitations that the Blazers have had. And then you credit Lillard and his development over the past few years. I mean, he's gotten better virtually almost every year since he's been in the league. And then, of course, CJ's a lot of fun to watch, the way he hunts for his shots and turns elbow jumpers into layups. At the very least, what you have is maybe not a true contender, but you've had a very entertaining basketball team capable of beating anyone on any given night. And at the end of the day, you know, the way the NBA has been the last 10 to 15 years, if you don't have two or three megastars, you're not going to win it. But you would at least hope that when you go to the game, you're being entertained, and I think that Portland fans have been.
Is there – I asked this of Chris McGowan, the Blazers president, when I had him on, but is there something the league could do, despite, like, some of the built-in – you know, the salary cap's not a hard cap, you know, but they do offer some incentives for players salary-wise who stick around. Not enough guys see that, though, and I think free agency is going to be chronically an issue in Portland. Is there something the league could do to help the small market teams?
Oh.
Too big an issue, huh? Because I had the same reaction, like, okay.
Yeah. Go ahead.
It's a 20,000-foot view. In the NFL, the fact that they have a hard cap and non-guaranteed contracts, the players all want to be paid, and there's a limited number of places that free agents can get the deal that they want. And yeah. I think there's a lot of parity because of that.
Right. The number one problem with the NBA is that one or two guys can change everything. Like, that's really – it's just the nature of the sport. You had Golden State, who was obviously already really good, and then they add Durant. Like, that's just stupid. Like, I've almost virtually boycotted that entire era. I don't care about it. I recognize it happened. That was just dumb. And so when you have a sport where you can totally change the balance of everything by one guy, one or two guys moving, then it's really difficult to control that. Like, how do you tell two or three guys they can't go somewhere? Like, you can't. Now, in the NFL... you could never, like, you'd need eight or nine guys, you know, to have that type of impact, and one would have to be quarterback. Well, you can't possibly get eight or nine superstars on the one NFL team. They'd all be making 15 to 20. Well, there goes your salary cap. So it's eight or nine stars, and then you, a tight end, me, a corner, you know, Adrian, a free safety, right? So it's just, and then in baseball, you know, we all know, no matter how great your star is, he can only bat four or five times. Like, Mike Trout, greatest player of this generation, hasn't won jack. Why? Because he only bat five times. You can't give him 35 shots, you know, like if he were an NBA player. So that's the problem with the NBA right there. And so what's happened is, you know, and this isn't new. Like, you know, the Lakers were stacked, but the Lakers were stacked in a different way back in the 80s. Like, it was different the way they drafted Magic. They drafted Worthy. And so now it's just teams, players are just like, well, I can just go over here with my boy and we can win. And so I don't know how you fix that, honestly.
Aaron Fentress of the Oregonian, Oregon Live. All right, Blazers schedule. They get the Rockets. They get the Nuggets. What are you interested to see in the next few outings?
Well, they're going to have to, you know, they're going to have to win three games, I think, against teams that are just flat out. They've been better than them all season because they got the Sixers as well. You got Dallas. Their last game against the Nets. That's the only team we can say they're definitely going to be favored in. So they gotta hope that they can somehow beat these teams and maybe hope that a couple of them, when they play them, don't have anything to play for. The scary thing, you know, I shouldn't say that. It's not scary anymore because the Pelicans lost twice. That's good because their schedule was the easiest. But, you know, with the Kings sitting out there and then San Antonio just moving a half game ahead of Portland, like now you're 10th. Like, a couple of days ago, you were celebrating being Memphis and drawing with a 2.5. Oh, my God. Now, oh, whoops, here comes the Spurs. They've won two in a row, and Aldridge is out, right? Like, wait, what? That's not supposed to be happening. So he is out, right? I didn't make that up, did I? I
heard. Yeah.
Correct if I'm wrong. He is out. So, anyway, so now, okay, now you're in 10th. Now you have to not only worry about staying within the distance of Memphis, but you could be within four games of Memphis, but be a 10th place, and it's not going to matter. So, and you don't get to play the Spurs. So they've got a tough road ahead right now. I'm actually a little worried. They're going to have to beat, you know, I would say three of the next four against, they got Houston, Dallas, Philly, and Denver. They got to win three of these four, I think, to have a shot to get into the play-in round.
Aaron Fentress of the Oregonian. All right. Right now, in your coronavirus world, what is the biggest, most inconvenient change that you've noticed?
In my life?
Yeah, your life, your regular life. How's your life been impacted?
Not going to movies with the kids, I think it's one thing. My kids are a little, my daughter is doing pretty well considering she's just social butterfly to the max, right? But right. We let her hang out with friends as long as they social distance and wear masks, and she's been really good about that. So she's had, contact with friends. My son's a little stir crazy because he really misses baseball, although they have started practicing again, but they don't know if they're going to have games or not. And although at first he was like, I got to sit home and play video games with my dad all day and go do baseball. After a while, it's like, he misses seeing a lot of his friends. So I think managing them is probably the biggest thing for me personally. I get to go play golf still. I obviously spent a lot of time working. So I don't think my life has been impacted that much. But I think just having the freedom to maybe go out and do a few things. We were going to go to Sun River, but you can't do much in Sun River. We were going to go to Disneyland. My daughter's dance team was going to dance at Disneyland. That got canceled. Actually, my son, my oldest son, who was going to get married this summer in Hawaii, that got canceled. So things like that. But I think day to day, we've managed it pretty well. And I think, I would never really publicly complain about our situation because I know there's so many more people dealing with so many more serious ramifications from this than us. I feel very fortunate.
Aaron Fentress, I appreciate you, man. Great work. Talk to you down the road.
All right, man. Take care.
All right, there's Fentress of the Oregonian. Follow him on Twitter. Read him on Oregon Live. Leave it here. You got the bald-faced truth. Coming up in the 2 o'clock hour, Anna will pop into the studio, as she does every day in the 2 o'clock hour. Judah Newby, what you been doing?
Man, went to, I took a page out of your book, went to the coast, stayed physically distant from folks, but I tell you what, it was beautiful, at least on Sunday and late Saturday. I was in a different part than you were, but it was a lot of fun just to get out for a little bit.
We kind of just made our way up and down the coast, which is really cool. It's not normal for us. We got a bunch of little kids living in our house, and so it's always thinking about, all right, where are we going to be when they're hungry? How long can we keep them in the car? All of that stuff. And we ended up going, sort of down the coast, Manzanita, Cannon Beach, Seaside, and all it looked like huge crowds were going into Seaside. So we just kind of did a U-turn. We went back the other direction, and we ultimately ended up down Rockaway Beach, where it was still quite a few people, but it wasn't as impacted as it was in the other part of the coast. And I like that because, all right, just so I can put this out there in a way that, like, people understand, like, when you marry somebody, ideally you're marrying your best friend. And we're celebrating an anniversary, and we're on the coast, and we're driving in a car. I can remember I woke up that day, I didn't feel particularly well. But I was, and I normally drive. I'm like, I don't have to be the driver, but I'm normally the driver. I don't know. Are you the driver in your relationship when you drive somewhere, Judah? If you guys are in the car, who's driving?
Yeah, we take her car because mine's a Manny, and she does not like a manual transmission being the passenger there. But I do drive her car. Yes, I'm the driver.
You're the driver. I'm usually the driver. It's very rare that I'm not the driver. Even when we go somewhere as a family, typically the girls will get in the car, and if we're making a trip, Anna will get in the passenger seat already, like kind of like there's a presumption. I said to Anna, I kind of don't feel good. Do you mind driving? And so she was driving, and I got a chance just to kind of hang out with her and talk. We didn't listen to the radio. We didn't listen to music. We just talked the whole way. And when you can sit in a car for several hours driving the coast, stopping off at small places, getting like, the cup of clam chowder and going and walking down on the beach and just be with like the person that, is your wife, best friend, muse. She's my muse. And you can ultimately have that kind of relationship. I I kind of left that trip going, I had the best time just driving. Now, she may come on here in the 2 o'clock hour and be like, what a hellish drive that was. And I listened to you talk for 2.5 hours. But I just feel like sometimes you're reminded in these small ways that it's not about these grand sweeping moments. And I said it last week with kids. It's not about these big moments. It's a series of small moments that sort of put it all together and make it, you know, make it a great great time. And that's the memory that you make, ultimately. So had the best time driving the coast and just hanging out with Anna and having the types of conversations, frankly, that we have on this radio show in a regular way. But now Vic in Vancouver has called in. He's got something to say. Vic, what's up, man?
Oh, not much. Heard you talking about Rockaway Beach. Got married on the beach 27 years ago.
Wow. Congrats, man.
It was red carpet, people. My wife was orchestrating the wedding. And I said, I need to have a little say something. So I picked the date. It was October 2nd. And a little cloudy, but it was great. We rented a whole hotel room for everybody. And
that's awesome.
It was great. It was beautiful.
I love it. And you got dogs in the end.
Oh, yeah. We got two collies. One of them.
What are their names?
Nuts and Bolts.
Nuts and Bolts. I love that. There's just two collies. He reminded me of a story because Anna and I got married on a beach as well. And we got married on a beach mostly because it was cheaper than getting married at the establishment. We got married in Hawaii, and the place we were going to get married at wanted to charge us a site fee. It was some ridiculous amount of money to stand on the lawn and get married. I think it was like $5,000. It was dumb. And I was looking at that going, we're already spending a bunch of money on catering. We're already spending a bunch of money on everybody staying at your hotel. Now, additionally, you're charging me to stand on the lawn while we do this ceremony? And they're like, well, there's much more to it than that. We put out chairs. We put out a nice thing. It's a nice ceremony, whatever. But I ultimately looked on a Google map, and I was like, damn, right there on the lawn, you're right next to the public beach. I wonder if we could just stand on the beach. And so I reached out to somebody locally there in Hawaii, and I said, what is it cost me to get a permit to stand on the beach? And they said, nothing. You just go to stand on the beach. You don't have to have a permit. And so we had my brother go stake out some turf on the sand, and we stood on the beach. And I was very proud, not only to marry Anna, but not to pay a big site fee and stand on that sand. So that was a good example of how creative you can be in a moment like that. And Vic in Vancouver did the same thing on Rockaway Beach. So I appreciate that story. All right, the 2 o'clock hour is coming up. We'll talk about the two most important things that are going on in the world of sports. And Anna will be popping into the show as she does every day in the 2 o'clock hour as well. You got the Bald Faced Truth statewide on the Bald Faced Truth Radio Network. I appreciate all those of you out there who listen via podcast.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Faced Truth.
Sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Faced Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Faced Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.